This is Liquidity Talks, a live stream and podcast series designed to share the latest trends and updates from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join us as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello, and welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks, live stream and podcast. I'm Neville Roberts, the CEO and founder of Planix, the market-leading fintech focused on real-time treasury, liquidity, and risk. Now, our topic today is entitled Real-Time Data Unleashed in a Programmable Economy. Welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon, and evening, wherever you may be. Anyone in the audience can ask a question as we run through today's session. If you want to ask one, you'll see the comments section on the right-hand side of your screen. I can take some of these as we go, but I can also answer any that come up at the end afterwards. If you'd like to ask a question, please let us know who you are and if you possibly can, your role, so we have some context. Now, today I'm joined by our guest speaker, Dan Feeney from Feeney Fintech. You may know Dan because he always asks a question on our previous podcast, so you might see his questions popping up in the past, but we've got the real man on today to talk to us. So, Dan, would you like to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do?
Nev, thanks for having me. This is super exciting. I have been in the wonderful world of fintech since about June of 2015, so coming on 10 years. I was doing recruitment living in Dublin, Ireland, and went to Belfast for something called MoneyConf. And it was a spin out from Web Summit. And that day and that hour, I said, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my career. So here we are, very excited about all things payments, all things identity, especially when identity starts to go beyond the bank account and starts to hit other aspects of people's lives, from the wallet to getting in and out of bars or airports or even casinos. So we're going very quickly beyond paper in the identity world. And then you guys are really good as a platform of risk, or to keep risk and across all things liquidity and treasury. So I've been following you guys for a couple of years, and excited to see where you guys go next as well. I'm just been in right now. I'm working Nev on confirming and verifying the payee using open banking APIs, the FAPI grade. Working is certainly at abstracting the core banking and pushing it to the area of need. So, you know, we're unbundling and rebundling digitally now. So the core is wherever the lending decision is, or the account is opened, or if you're doing trading or investing. And certainly wealth management will happen in that space of infrastructure soon. Also working a bit in crypto at the gaming side. And kind of exploring where we're going with wallets. And wallets can be interoperable and can be very, it can hold lots of stores of value, Nev. So we're going beyond fiat, we're going to stablecoin, whatever programmable value makes things real time. And then I'm very excited with agentic AI because that is the ultimate silo killer, you know, knocking down the departmental walls. So,
yeah, perfect. Thanks very much, Dan. Now, all our listeners know, I like to start off with a little bit to talk on football. And I'm not going to let you off the hook, Dan, because I know you're a West Ham fan. So that's gonna have a lot of explaining to do. Do you want to explain how you ended up a West Ham fan?
I lived in London for 8-9 years now, and was living south of the Thames. And you know, the only club in the area was Charlton, and they're not Premier League. So I sort of didn't have a club until I moved to East London, and so I got hogtied into being a West Ham fan and really enjoy them, especially now that they seem to have a plan forward after David Moyes, and was happy to see them win that little trophy though in Europe. So
and they've just survived again, so you've got another season.
17 is better than 18, Nev.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So look, let's talk about the topic today. We always set with a level setter, Dan, and with that in mind, can you explain what you mean by a programmable economy?
Well, I think if you converge the APIs, which are programmable code, linking data sets, and then you add the code base of AI, whether it's an agentic or even a large language that you can manage the workflows, you can automate the movement of data between accounts, between third parties, between customers and banks. And therefore, actions with consent are taking with your ability with it to better your lifestyle. So think about the wellness, the holistic, the benefits to merge accounts and make decisions on your behalf to better your financial outcomes.
Got it. So it's about setting up a set of rules that govern exchanges of data between platforms for the good of everyone, really.
Yeah, and again, the areas of identity with interoperability and having the track and trace possibilities. So you're actually moving backwards and forwards in the same time.
Got it. And so we talk about APIs. Can you provide an example, I guess, of how APIs are driving real-time value exchange in banking? Any good examples of that?
I think the simplest explanation would be a Klarna or an Affirm that does buy now, pay later. So they link who you are as a customer to who the merchant is. They make a real-time lending decision. And that's typically done with one suite of APIs, but a master API that orchestrates all those data flows and makes a decision with automated workflows. So there might be a human orchestrator, but a lot of that is automated to the point of need or the point of purchase.
Got it. So I was just thinking then, I bought some golf clubs 2 months ago, yeah. And I was about to pay. And the guy said to me, you can get an interest-free credit for a year. And I thought, why not? And I typed in my details. That whole process lasted a minute or so. It wasn't that long, but back came a decision. I got the clubs, I got 0% finance. That's the kind of API that we're talking about here.
Was that financing just for those clubs?
Yes.
Okay. And had you ever been to that store before?
I had, yes.
Okay. So they did have a baseline of who you are as a person and some of your spending histories as well.
Yeah, they did. They did. Okay. But it was quick. It was just like that. It wasn't like I was there for a long time.
If they didn't know who you were and you just rocked into the store, would that have taken a lot longer or a little bit longer to get that offer?
Probably. Good. So look, let's talk about open banking as well. How is open banking embedding finance at the point of need for businesses and customers?
Well, as you know, UK here is the home of open banking from the regulatory mandate of our Consumer and Markets Authority back right around 2015, 2016. We've seen across Europe the PSD1, the PSD2, and now we're into the open finance and the open data, which really is platforms to share data with consent. Open banking enables account to account. So you're moving value either from one of your own accounts to another one of your own accounts, or you're sharing it with a family member or a friend, or possibly you're making a text payment. That's all handled. What they're also called this, Neville, now is pay by bank. So it's basically bank sending instructions through an open banking, a FAPI grade data link to send, let's say, value or money from one account to another or one wallet to another. That can all happen to lower fees for the merchant or the third party, because these things happen outside of traditional card rails, either a debit or a credit, or even an old rail of SWIFT with wire, international transfers. So the thing that's super exciting, Nev, in that space is cross-border, because that's where a lot of the fees start to really go up, and it also makes it faster and safer.
Yeah, and what I'm seeing now is if I want to pay for a good, over a certain price, I don't have to use a card. I can actually enter my bank through the API on the consumer site, pay for it, and get it accepted by my bank, and it gets paid straight from the bank. And that was never in place years ago. You had to pay by a card or do some kind of transfer, but now you can do that and it goes straight into your account. So that's an example, right, of an API that you can use.
And it's very use case specific, Nev. So, you know, some of the higher value ticket items, you get protection by using a Visa, MasterCard, one of those rails, because they come with kind of implied or inherent or even governed liability. So there's sort of a right of recourse if it's a bad service or a bad product or it's not. But if it's something that's quite transactional in nature, everyone wins. You get it faster, you get it cheaper. And the merchant doesn't have to pay the interchange or even the card fee.
Yeah, we've seen, I think over the last 2 years, we've seen an acceleration of the use of APIs in retail or for consumers. How far behind are corporates in that? Because we get asked quite a lot, you know, when can you provide this solution for corporates? And we can if they have SWIFT, but only the largest have SWIFT. But with the open banking APIs in place for corporates, we can do all of what we do for corporates. So I just, you know, what's your view in terms of when that's going to come?
Well, here in the UK, a lot of the traction in open banking has been between business and company paying their taxes, because HMRC puts open banking as the first payment option, and they also don't charge, right? So you're paying 2 points on Visa, MasterCard, so why not pay nothing while you're already paying your taxes anyway, right? In a B2B treasury world, you know, we have in this country this Association of Corporate Treasurers, which have been talking about bringing these things in, automating receivables, automating payables, getting rid of the traditional 30, 60, 90, you know, payment windows. Is that a control function? Is that a finance function? I think it's a simple technology fix, but you have to connect three parts of your enterprise. You have to make sure that the payments are orchestrated between employees and vendors and the hub treasury department. You need to make sure that finance has cash on hand to do immediate payouts. Sometimes, you know, you guys are obviously do a lot of liquidity provisioning for banks, but, you know, if you automate and you pay out, then, you know, you might have to go on to overdraft because you've set up the system to not be so scheduled at a monthly or a quarterly pay cycle. I think the best use case right now for what you're describing is probably in global payroll, where people can choose to be paid in crypto or stablecoin or fiat, and it's automated and programmed. Therefore, the money just lands into the wallet or lands into the account. Seeing a lot of adoption in global payroll.
Got it. I mean, right now we only pay in cash, but everyone who's hearing this from Planex is probably going to ask me to be paid in some form of coin next time. So that'll be interesting.
Well, here we are with the new government in America. They're all talking stablecoin. I think a lot of things were on hold there, but, you know, watch how quickly value can move. And then the demand will hit business and various treasury departments. And look, if the government's getting on board, then it doesn't fall far from there, from regulation to safety.
True. One thing's for certain, HMRC make it really easy for you to pay your taxes. We all know that. So
I use it.
It will, but when you can pay in Bitcoin, then it'll be interesting. Not quite there yet.
The rails aren't built yet. The front end, the UI and the UX are not there. You'd have to jump through several hoops to do it. But hey, the cool kids are doing it, so. Yeah.
Okay. Let's broaden this out a bit in terms of treasury management. You know, how does the growing importance of real-time data, because that's what we're here to talk about as well, impact treasury management strategies holistically?
Well, like any data management, you guys probably get calls to sort of cleanse and curate and structure the data before it feeds through an API, correct? So, you know, we are gradually going in the banking sector. We're going from batch to real time, and that benefits every counterparty. It forces companies like SWIFT to do GPI, which obviously pays out in minutes rather than days. Yeah. Think about all the benefits real time brings to trading securities, trading bonds, trading financial instruments, trading commodities. You know, I'm pretty sure that China's already on T plus zero. So, is that science fiction to call it instant settlement? Well, if you're instant settlement, then you're already at real time.
Yeah, and look, I think we made a choice 10 years ago that the world's moving real time, right? We saw that. And I think it's not just in banking, it's absolutely everywhere. It's a kind of instant gratification fix, whether it's retail.
That's core to your thesis, Ned, isn't
whatever
it
is.
That's core to your thesis, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. It is. Right. So if we talk about technologies, you know, what emerging technologies are out there that you've either seen, witnessed, or are coming up that banking professionals need to watch out for in the realms of liquidity management?
Well, certainly onboarding is getting more and more tricky because we're going ever more digital. So who's the entity? Are you dealing with a person or a robot? These are existential questions, right? Yeah. Who carries the risk when decisions are made that a regulator does not approve of? Because, you know, this is always the battle between testing the frontiers of fintech, whether we're doing things in crypto or we're creating, let's say, unregulated activities. As long as you know how it is in the boardrooms of the central banks, as long as it's not systemic, they're going to let it happen and keep a close eye on it. But just as we're going to real-time money, we need to go to real-time regulation. So this is in a time when we've got Gen AI going to agentic AI, when you're linking several large language models together in real time with a human orchestrator. Is that a regulator? Is that a compliance person? Who actually checks that the service is done as good or if not better? Even if it's cheaper and faster, is that better? Or does it create new fragmentations? And then quantum is this singularity where, you know, we're not living in a binary world anymore. Everything is simultaneous. And the people that love real time love quantum because this really everything happens in a continuum.
On quantum, is that just a way to speed things up? You know, we've had Moore's law for 20 odd years. Is that just a way to continue that? It's just faster processing. Is that how you see it? So it makes real time as real as it can possibly be.
I think it becomes exponential when you use quantum with agentic AI, because then the human is not in the loop anymore. So there are societal concerns, there are workforce concerns. If I'm a regulator, that's Pandora's box. I'd want to keep that carefully monitored.
Got it. And in terms of AI, we get asked a lot, you know, what's your strategy around AI? What are you doing? What are your plans? And a lot of what we do, actually, banks, if they just had the basics in place, they'd move a lot further forward. But AI, we're starting to use that in terms of forecasting, right? How can we get the most accurate forecast? Regulators want to know, obviously, what happened in the past. Did you have control at the point of an issue or a liquidity challenge? But also, more so, they want to know, looking forward, how accurately can you predict liquidity need? And the use of AI in that is becoming really important to us, and I think across the industry as well.
Well, I think it also becomes a stronger partnership between you and your customers, because you've got to work collaboratively at the cutting edge of what's possible. So you're now noticing probably with the AI opportunity, you're working beyond compliance, beyond risk. You're probably starting to work a lot more with product. And then it's becoming a board level imperative to do checks. And so you're moving up and across the organization at big global banks. So that's exciting times for you. If I were you guys, I'd start internal with your own workforce and make sure they're the most trained on the new models and the new AI possibilities, because you guys got to lead as the expert level.
No, I agree. So, Dan, we have it's a question or a point, but it's from a LinkedIn user. So who's it from? But real-time reconciliation, allocation of funds is both hard and key. Structured references glue the physical and financial supply chains together, enable payment versus delivery to become real. That ring a chime with you? Does that chime with you?
Well, you know, they'd say the global standard of ISO 222, right? So yeah. if you can... if you can tailor and structure the message to the transaction, then both sides can clearly identify. There's a lot of work to be done at messaging in real time to go along with moving value in real time.
Got it. Now, future, right? What does the future hold in terms of real-time data, payments, liquidity management over the next, say, you know, 5-10 years, or even 3, because technology as ever is changing so quickly. But what's your view of what the future holds?
I think companies are going to scale faster to serve a real need, as I said earlier, to break down human silos, make work more inherently collaborative, and have the true customer, the true business in the center. You've heard of the flywheel. It's all digital, it's all end-to-end, it's all automated. So, you know, I don't think any large company can rest on his or her laurels anymore. But it starts with the framework for safety and soundness. I mean, the central bankers are going to say that, but so will the governments, because, you know, once these business models start to morph and adapt, then you have to assume the speed will be there and the costs will go way down to run an organization. So the one question I always ask when we start to go even into the near future, is it better and safer for people in society? These are existential questions that become philosophical more than technological.
Got it. So what about the main risks involved with real time? So I'm thinking about cybersecurity, data breaches, operational errors, fat finger type stuff. What, you know, there's more risk, I presume, when you move to real time.
Well, I think every market needs to really, really help business and consumer with identity. And that's a full digital identity, as we spoke about identity earlier. You solve for security and privacy by embedding identity and making sure that is continually updated, because AI creates things like vectors and deep fakes from face to voice to even, you know, copying everything you've ever written online. There can be a clone of you created in 5 minutes and acting without your consent to create a whole financial life. Is that a clone? Is that a deep fake? How do you control your own identity? Well, today you just got to watch your back. It's a scary, scary opportunity, but also one with great responsibility.
No, I know. I was just thinking then we have so many emails come into our finance group asking for a payment from Neville Roberts at Planix. Yeah, my telephone number. They call us. It's that we get all.
You're
of
the
those.
Face of the company, so then therefore you're the authorizer. Yeah,
exactly. And you know, no. Just you almost have to assume everything's fake, which is sad, but it's true. And what, you know, in terms of what we do and what everyone's doing now, you have to design for, just like you design for performance and you design for scale, you design for security, for cyber threats. You have to design it in right from the start. You can't just add something in at the end. You have to think about it all through the technology value chain.
You guys wouldn't spend so much on identity and access management with passwords and usernames and all that. Digital identity, you're basically beyond the password. You're beyond the username. There's that mirror of who you are as a physical person and what your digital representation is. And that's continuously updated because you're in the center of the flywheel. But without that foundation of digital identity, we're only opening up more opportunities for fraud and bad juju.
Yeah. Okay, what about kind of old and new? So, you know, how does interoperability between legacy platforms and new modern tech stacks impact liquidity management and the real time? Because we get asked this a lot. You typically see a bank, they've got technology platforms that are 20, 30 years old. Off, you know, we turn up with our shiny new tech platform and you're only as fast as the slowest bit in a way. So we have to make sure that they're as interoperable as they possibly can be. But obviously the bank doesn't want to overly spend on that. Any views on that?
Well, I mean, again, we're going from a relationship architecture, an event-driven architecture. you're looking at the graph matrix of a large company that's basically a global network. Think of Facebook, yes, or Meta now. These are not point-to-point solutions. These are not connecting one endpoint to another endpoint. It's basically heat maps with graphs and associations. So as code gets embedded, we become part, just a node as part of this networked economy. Come back to the Satoshi paper of Bitcoin. What was that? It's basically one giant network of shared identities with the cryptographics, right?
Yeah.
But there's no so basically interoperability is only the key when we go into funky things like blockchains and digital led. But I mean, you guys probably get pitched on blockchain and digital, you know, technologies and all this DLTs.
Yeah.
But why do we need to go that step further when you can automate workflows using AI? I just wonder, that's the real debate in the near term.
Got it. And just a comment here from Jen Shaw. Dan, you hit the nail dead center with the comments on identity. It's central to the whole concept of instant execution. Couldn't agree more with that, Jen. So look, haven't got much time left. Let's just talk about innovation for a minute. So any innovative examples you've seen in terms of real-time data use cases in payments and banking?
Well, you know, this is the year of stablecoin. So we're seeing Circle take on Visa, MasterCard at cross-border just this week. The Genius Act in America will enable and also request from the top down that banks carry fiat and stablecoin on their balance sheets.
Yeah.
And that, so they're going to have to work with lots of technology partners to make sure that a bank balance sheet, but also a customer balance sheet, has various flows of funds and various currencies. I think we really need to keep an eye on where trade and technology overlap. I'm spending a lot of time in supply chain and logistics right now because, you know, you can have a lot of paper-based letters of credit and lines of credit and various insurance and flows of goods, but the payment and the message has to come together with that, because otherwise, who makes money? The brokers and the hedgies.
Yep. Got it. Perfect. So look, Dan, we are running out of time. We always end with this question. If you have one key takeaway for the listeners today, what would it be?
Well, look, it's. I think that fintech and banks are at the same game finally. As I said, I've been in this space around 10 years. And AI is the greatest opportunity and the greatest risk that we all face as society. But, you know, just take a look at what telco's doing. They are moving data in real time with telemetry. And I think the lessons need to come from telco to help fintech and banks stay relevant. Otherwise, you get abstracted and become a utility. There's no business model left. There's no margins. So we really have to be aware of what telco's doing.
Perfect. Well, look, thanks very much, Dan. Unfortunately, we are just about to run out of time today. So thanks for sharing your views today. If you do want to contact Dan, you just go onto his LinkedIn profile and contact him through there. If you want to hear any more views or thoughts. And if anyone asks a question after this event, we will get back to you after the event, either through LinkedIn or through email. That concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast today. We'll put the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music, and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. Thank you very much. Look out for our next podcast on the 15th of May. This is going to be a special one. We've got Josh Mickle. He's a seasoned liquidity risk expert. He's ex-Barclays, ex-UBS, and the topic is related to Trump and the impact on liquidity. So maybe we'll get a little bit political there. We'll be talking tariffs, financial market volatility. So hopefully we'll get a good audience for that. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.